Menopause, perimenopause, these can be some of the most uncomfortable phases of a woman's life. If you find yourself in either of these, well, Hormone Harmony is here for you. Hormone Harmony capsules contain science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life.
Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it really shows.
And get this, Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it is perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold.
And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Dress the History of Fashion is a production of iHeartRadio. With over 7 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary.
And Dress listeners, we are back. Welcome to season 4 of Dressed.
Can you believe it, April? 4 seasons of this podcast. My, how time flies.
More than 220 episodes produced at this point.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, Dress listeners, for joining us on this journey. And we are excited to bring you what is sure to be a very fun season 4. So,
yes.
Welcome back. And April, a lot has happened since we last talked to our Dressed audience just over 1 month ago. And I don't know about our listeners, but I am so looking forward to today's episode as a much needed respite from the 24 hours news cycle.
I cannot agree with you more. And because of that, we promise that today's guest is going to deliver that perfect merger of fantasy and fashion, because today we are joined by the one, the only, Zaldi.
Known professionally by his first name, Zaldi, Zaldi is an Emmy Award-winning costume and fashion designer, perhaps best known for his 27-plus year relationship with RuPaul, but that is actually just one of the many aspects of the designer's prolific career.
From an early career in modeling and then transitioning into the world of design, Zaldi is now a world-renowned talent, having designed for everyone from Lady Gaga to Britney Spears to Cirque du Soleil, and we are so excited to learn all about his history, process, and inspiration.
Zaldi, welcome to Dressed. It is such a pleasure to have you here today. We are so excited to have you join us.
Thanks, Cassidy. Hi, April.
Hello. Welcome, welcome.
I think April joins me, you know, to say we're excited to have you here with us today. It's kind of a bit of an understatement. We're both huge fans of your work and what you've done. And before we dive into your incredible career trajectory, we would love to hear a little bit more about what started it all for you. For instance, do you have like an earliest memory of when you realized the transformative power of clothing?
I definitely, from like my youngest ages, like whether it was like clothing, it was definitely fabric. And from the time I was like an infant, I just remember having this very soft blanket, and like the blanket was my cape, it was my cloak, it was like my tent, it was like a gown. It was so many things to me, and I realized how like the softness of that fabric against my skin, what that piece of fabric made me feel like, or who it made me feel like I could be, whether it was like a superhero or, you know, like some kind of wrapped Grecian something. I don't know. I just was sort of like aware of the transformative power of that fabric, you know, somehow. And it sort of led me down that road. You know, I had a lot of freedom in how I dressed myself as a kid. I always was able to make my own choices. But, I, you know, going back to fabric, I remember a time when I was maybe like 7, and I had decided to like pull all of the sheets of the linen closet that I liked. And I pulled them all out, and I just started like draping gowns on myself and thinking, you know, like, oh my God, how amazing this square has become, this amazing. you know, and so I used to do like little runway shows. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I just was playing. I was such a kid. But, you know, it was a little worrisome for the parents, you know, like whether it was just getting sheets dirty or whether it was a red flag, you know, definitely not encouraged, but I definitely felt it, you know. And it's like, it's the same thing I do now. I just wrap fabric around my body and I'm like, oh, this looks like this type of dress, you know, like, oh, we could do this with this. It's really like the earliest connection I have, you know, it's not just visual. It's really my own experience. So.
Yeah. And so as you've just expressed to us, from a very young age, you were able to look and see, you know, all the possibilities of fabric and cloth. And I think I read somewhere too that your grandmother had a really important role in your relationship to fashion as an early age too.
She definitely did, more so in like just art in general, because, you know, back in those days, it's like if you came from the Philippines, it's like, you know, she stayed for like 3 months, you know. And so she only stayed in my bedroom and I stayed on like a pull-out bed. So we kind of became like, I was sort of like her best friend in a weird way, this little kid, but she was very artistic. And, you know, she did have a fashion school, I learned later, in the Philippines, among other things that she did. But, you know, she taught me how to like draw with pencils using like a grid. You know, she taught me to like paint with melted crayons over stuff. You know, it was like, it really opened up just the idea of materials and what you could do with materials and how fun they could be. Really, I guess thinking outside of the crayon box, honestly,
you know. Right.
Yeah. And that exploration of materials, you continued further in the 80s and 90s. You studied at Parsons in LA and also at FIT in New York. We are all alums of FIT here.
Are you?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I got the information I needed from that school. I had a great time there. You know, I was continuing ed, you know, because after the sort of like regular college experience in LA, I just was like, I just want to get an education. I don't want to like socialize. I wanted to, you know, I just wanted to like do work and learn and get out of there.
Yes. So. But of course you were also modeling at the same time, right?
No, not, I mean, modeling really came out like sort of around the time. I mean, it's sort of like kind of hand in hand. Like I guess my first sort of real modeling job was with Steven Meisel for Interview Magazine. And they were shooting like Children of the Night, you know, before there was even like formally like, these are club kids. So he was like my first photo shoot, but it was really me as just me, which was very androgynous, you know, and I was always androgynous, or, you know, people thought it was a female, you know, it was one way or the other. It was definitely more on the feminine side, especially when I was younger. But it really wasn't until like I met Matthew, who was my boyfriend at the time. And I was together with him for like 10 years, but he was like a pretty famous makeup artist who only worked with like Steven Meisel, Steven Klein, doing like major campaign. Like he was big deal, you know? And like, he is the one who would do like test makeup on me and kind of like bring that part of me out. And sort of, you know, the next step in that was Suzanne Barsh, you know, who, when she saw us as a pair, like I'd already been going out to her clubs alone, but when I met Matthew, we went together and she's like, oh, you should be, you know, a twins, twin drag, you know, and like, Matthew's, you know, like was like 5 inches taller than me, white, skinny, you know, it was just like, somehow we became like this duo. And within that duo, I think is when like the real fashion world saw it. They're like, oh, wow, you should really be a model, you know? And it was like, crushing in a little bit because, you know, I really studied as you studied, like, you know, like at school to become a something, and I wanted to be a fashion designer, but I really got pushed into modeling, you know?
Yeah. And you model for Terry Mugler. You've modeled for Vivienne Westwood. I mean, these are some pretty amazing campaigns. I mean,
like, it was good. It was a major, like, Levi's campaign that, like, ran for, like, years. And it was good. I really, like, I was one of those, like, I just want to be known for my talent, you know, as you are as an art student. But I learned to accept how great of an insight that was into, like, the fashion world. It was a different vantage point. And, you know, you just had access to these, like, major photo shoots with, like, major editors sitting there and, like, art directors and makeup artists and hair. It was really incredible. So I'm so thankful that I did get, I'm thankful for actually all those things that people sort of, like, kind of pushed me into doing, you know, because in one way or the other, they always become a really beneficial part of my life.
Yeah.
So it would appear that the 1990s really laid the foundation for what would become this prolific career for yourself that you built for yourself in both costume and fashion design for the stage and the screen. You started your own label, I believe, in 2002. You also designed for Gwen Stefani's label, Lamb. You did the show-stopping tour wardrobe for pop stars from Lady Gaga to Britney Spears, you know, multiple shows for Cirque du Soleil. All the while, you've been designing RuPaul's drag looks for 27 years and counting. Is this mutually reinforcing relationship between fashion and costume design something you intended, or did it kind of naturally evolve with your interests and the opportunities you received?
Like a lot of things, a couple decades ago, people really liked you to choose like a box, you know, like I am a this, you know, like, and if you are a fashion designer, what are you doing wasting time dressing pop stars? You know, it's like, then you're not a serious designer. And sometimes I fell into it a little bit. You just can't help it because you have people, very smart people around you encouraging and telling you through their experience, what their experience is. But everything changes, you know, and it's like at different paces. And so it's like, you know, it's like I really started making clothes for pop stars, you know, really. I mean, I was making clothes for Lady Miss Keir, you know, in my early days, and then RuPaul and all these people. So I think I had in my mind like a real distinction of like there was fashion, which was what I set out to do. And then there was costume design. And it was like you kind of didn't mix the two. But the more and more that I would do fashion, the more and more sort of like costume design and that world kept pulling me in, and I couldn't say no. It was just too interesting. Like you can't say no to Gwen Stefani, you know, like this idea, do you want to design a line of clothing with me? Okay. You know, it's like, you can't say no to like doing Michael Jackson's final tour, you know, or Cirque du Soleil. Like I had apprehension about doing Cirque du Soleil because I guess I didn't really know it. I really wasn't paying attention to it so much. I knew what it was, but I hadn't been to a show since, I guess, like, oh. And I loved it, but I felt like it was going to take me away from something. But it really just led me into another part of my life that would really become, like, at this point, a more dominant part for now. You know what I mean? I never want to put that limit of this is who I am now. But, or forever, it is who I am now. It's like I definitely love costume design. And like, I think it's because it's like the line is so much fuzzier now. Like, you know, whether you're a costume designer, stylist, designer, fashion designer, it's like, it's really all like a design creative process. And like, people are more accepting to like understand it as one thing, really, you know. So I love it. I'm like, I'm so happy that I also got swept into costume design. And the community, it's like a different community. I love it. You know, it's like all the people I've met are just, it's just a whole different world than the fashion world, and yet the same.
I'm such a huge fan of Cirque du Soleil, and you've done, I think, 3 shows with them now. Can you tell us a little bit about designing for Volta? To me, it's compared to the other projects that you've done, and you have such this incredible resume, to me, Cirque du Soleil seems like it would be its own entity in that they're defying human capabilities basically in what they do. And then the costumes are such an integral part of that story.
In the end, it really did become sort of like an ultimate culmination or expression of like the language I speak of fashion and costume and music come together. I definitely, because my first shows were about, they were both Michael Jackson themed, and Michael was so much about his costume, his image, and about fashion. Like, I definitely wanted everyone to sort of like connect with the people on stage and in a way that's sort of more relatable as to like, oh, I love this image and I love these outfits. You know, like I want to be this character, you know, like I wanted people to feel inspired and comfortable with the outfits on stage so much so that they can envision themselves as part of it, you know? And I think in every show, I did that. And then in Volta, I went even further because there was like a struggle, you know, in these Cirque shows, a lot of people don't know because there's, you know, music or languages and different words. It's like there is a narrative going on, and there was more so in Volta. And there was, it was kind of like defining the different parts of yourself and sort of like finding your freedom at the end of it. And it's sort of like defined in three different types of families of sort of like elites and sort of like your everyday city people going about their lives and the people who live off the land, the free spirits. So three distinct type characters that kind of needed to tell the story through the colors and the textures and the attitudes that they had, so that like at any time, if any of those people were on stage together, you would clearly know that they were different families on stage at the same time. So I worked really hard to like make great distinctions of like, you know, where elites, like the only time you ever see metallic are on is in an elite world. So anything that's shiny and hard is there in this sort of like everyday world. It's like, you know, an exploration of gray. Everything is shades of gray, but it's beautiful. The costuming is very fashionable. It's very like city and very like tailored. And in the freeze, it's like my approach was making things off of the land. So like a lot of the outfits are patterned off of like backpacks and like fanny packs and you know, anoraks and like common day items that might be discarded that you might find secondhand that then all get to be put together with sort of like lacing or crocheting or shredding up the fabric and reweaving it into like tops. For the free spirits, it's like I only wanted things that they could possibly have made themselves with their own hands, you know? So it was a great sort of like project to explore and define. And I wish it was still running, you know, right now. I mean, it was doing so amazing and it was getting better every time. Every time I saw it, you know, they kept improving on the show. But who knows? Who knows what happens? Hopefully this year there's something happens, you know?
Absolutely. And I have to say, I come from film and TV too, costumes, but I started in theater, and there is nothing quite like when you worked so hard on your costumes and your teams worked so hard, and then you actually get to see it happen right in front of your eyes. I mean, it's just the most incredible feeling.
It is. And it's like it's the moment you really lead up to, you know, whether it's like you're designing a tour, you know, it's like finally the dress rehearsal has come, you know, and you're like looking at everybody's, you know, contribution working together on stage for the first time. And it's, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting and nerve-wracking and stressful, but it's really, really mostly you're so excited to like see it finally moving and so you can get to the next step, next level.
When you are working with Britney or Lady Gaga or, you know, some of these are massive like tours that you're designing, where do you start? Like, and I'm sure each individual project kind of like dictates certain aspects of that, but I'm just hoping you can tell us a little bit about the design process for some of these larger tours. Or I mean,
the first thing that, you know, like, you know, you get a call, you know, from your agent or from their agent or their people, whatever. And, you know, so immediately you're like, oh my God, what's it going to be? You know, like maybe you've heard a song from the album, but you don't even know the whole new album. Maybe you don't know what it is. So you get ideas in your head already of just ideas in general. But then what normally happens is there's like a creative deck that comes your way from the tour designer or the director. And those could be, you know, I've gotten creative decks that are like 178 pages, you know, and I've gotten decks that are like here's a shot of the piano on the stage with the lighting. You know, it's like, you know what we're doing. You know, it's like I've gotten all different things, but, you know, you're a part of a big vision that is all in support of this one act. And, you know, like you just hope that your focus and what you can contribute to that deck harmonizes with everybody else. And like, we get to like all celebrate together and everything just works together for this like incredible moment. But, you know, it's like I said, we're working with incredibly talented people, set designers, sound people, the lighting people, you know, it's like, it's such a huge, huge production of people that really have to come together. And really, it's like your only true vision is the muse, and that is your artist, you know, and that's the person who gets you through, you know, like you listen to their music nonstop, you listen to, you know, if it's available, the run of the show. So you can actually start to visualize what these, like, where the moments, the high moments are, where the low, or the calmer moments are, the ballads. And like, you can start to find a rhythm of like how you want to reveal the character until the exciting end of the show.
And how collaborative are some of the artists that you also work with in what they wear on stage?
I mean, luckily everybody that I work with has a really strong identity and a very strong point of view, and also a really good idea of themselves, you know, like who they are to themselves and who they are to their fans. So very normally very involved, you know, like mm-hmm. I can't think of anyone who's doesn't have an opinion of what they like to see, you know. Yeah. You know, RuPaul has some gratitude, but it's like, it's, I mean that in less than like a tour situation where we're like every single second, you know, we need to think about, but you know, Ru, it's just to jump back into that. It's like, you know, it's, we have such an easy rapport that, you know, no matter how big our work is and how much we do, it's always like with understanding and stride that we take those projects on.
Well, goodness. And you guys have been working with each other for 2+ decades now.
And the oddest thing, it's like, you know, we're working together more than ever. You know, like, who would have actually thought that? You know, I mean, I think we're definitely doing like six shows this year alone, you know? So it's like, it's a lot, you know? I'm always not surprised, but always so happy to see this like bruise in influence and outlook being spread into the world, you know, such a positive force. Like, I've always known Ru as this, like spiritual, powerful being who, you know, has something to show and something to say. You know, that's how I've always seen Ru before we even started working together.
How did you two first meet?
In a nightclub, you know, as a lot of these relationships in New York happen, it's just in the nightclub scene. And I remember, I normally don't introduce myself to people or walk out to people, but I remember I couldn't resist walking up to Ru and just saying like, oh my God, you know, hi, you know, like I saw you last night and, you know, like you look so amazing, but and you're wearing the same exact outfit, you know, as you are right now. I'm like, that's amazing. And I wasn't thinking of it as being kind of shady, you know, or anything, but it was just, that's how Ru, and like, and I've said many times, Ru said, when it works, it works. And it's just something that I've always remembered. It's like, oh, you can wear the same thing 3 times, 4, it doesn't matter, you know? And I love how that's happened, you know, in recent years, like on red carpets and thing, you know, where people are like, oh, it's my 10-year-old Dior bias dress. I'm wearing it again. You know, like I love that idea of recycling clothes, you know?
Yeah. Well, we have a big sustainability platform on the show. We talk about it a lot. So yeah. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, and Ru like definitely loves to pull from the archive and surprise even me by like at the last second being like, I'm gonna wear this. And it's like from 1992 or 1990, whatever. It's always fun to like see how like Ru's mind works with her archive of her own image and you know, formulating the future of and the current image that she has now.
And I know that you, I think, designed one of RuPaul's, like the cover of the Supermodel of the World album, which was, it's a lot of people credit with launching RuPaul's career. How did you, your relationship, how did you start working together?
Well, it happened actually with through Suzanne Bartsch again. We were all on this, you know, tour in Japan of like these nightclubs, like in three different cities. You know, we would travel, Matthew and me and a couple other people like Joey Arias and Rue. And we'd all, you know, I'm not a performer, but I would be there kind of as like a, I always had a look as like a host. But I remember in one city, Rue just was like, oh, you know, I think my record deal is actually going to happen. And I'm going to need like some, you know, do you guys want to like work on my image with me, with like image design? And it was like, I didn't really necessarily, again, even understand what that meant, but it was just, we sort of said yes, you know? So just started there very casually again, like at a nightclub, just asking if we would do it. And then it led to World Wonder, Randy and Fenton, who have been with Rue also longer than me, you know, took it from there. And then we started talking about the album cover, the image of the album cover, and that there was going to be a video shot at the same time. I don't know if you've seen the Supermodel video.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah. So many times. I just remember
the freedom of filming in New York. Like, oh, go jump in the fountain in front of, you know, the Plaza Hotel. Just go to, you know, no permit. Just like, go jump in. Film until we fail. You know, it's like, I love that freedom. That was amazing. I loved it. So surprising, like all those moments. It's like, I love all the moments I have with Rue have always been incredible. I just like, she's turned out to be one of my most amazing muses that I've ever had.
You have designed every single outfit that RuPaul has worn on RuPaul's Drag Race. Can you tell us a bit about that creative process and how you continually find inspiration? I've read in multiple interviews that not only does RuPaul give you complete artistic license with your designs for her, you also conduct zero fittings because you two have worked together so many times for so long.
I mean, it is, it's true. It's like, we don't have fittings. We've really never had fittings for Drag Race ever until, you know, maybe like really, I mean, you can count them on one hand, but it is true. It's like when you know somebody's body and like, and not only when you know their body, when you create that body, it's foam and bony. You know, it's like, it's a stuffed body, you know? It's like, you really know the dimensions and the proportions of that body and, you know, what the length of the dress is going to be, you're wearing which heel or, you know, whether you're sending the shoe or not. It's like you know, like we've learned so much and gained that much trust with each other as well. You know, it's like, I have it with a few of my clients where I just, you know, they don't necessarily need to see a sketch. They don't need to see whatever. They're just like, you know, I'm going to blah, 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 wherever. I'm going to the Met Gala, you know, like I need a gown. It's a very rare, special kind of relationship. And, you know, but we do talk about it. You know, we talk about, you know, do we want to show more legs this year? Do we want, you know, where do we want to go? You know, but there is so much freedom and a lot of that freedom gets to be explored, you know, in my studio with my assistants. And, you know, it's like we say, it's like my studio's favorite project. They love doing Rue. You can almost do anything you can possibly imagine within a time frame.
And I think I read that you start with the textiles, like you talked about how formative textiles were in your relationship to fashion and costume design. And then I think I've read in a couple different interviews that you really start with the fabric as your inspiration for a lot of these designs.
Absolutely. And it goes back to, you know, my blankets. It's just like the importance of fabric and that fabric is transformative, you know, and I've said it. I learned this at Glorious FIT. In a draping class, you know, where it's like, you know, don't force your fabric to do what you want it to do. You have to listen and see what, you know, the fabric doesn't want to drape over there. It's like, you have to work with it, you know? So it's like, once you're sure of how your fabric works, it's like, and the possibilities and you set up those parameters, you kind of, you know, it starts to help define like what this dress is going to be. The design can be end up on paper, or it could just end up in the head and start coming out in style tape and in fabric draped directly onto the form. But yeah, it is the fabrications that really dictate the design. I mean, sometimes it is the design where I'm like, this is what I need, you know, whether it's like LED, it's like, I need lights, you know, but normally I start with fabric.
You mentioned earlier, you referenced re-pulling things from the archive, and I actually work as a curator at FIT, so I'm in my own collection of archives.
Thank you, and I'm going to come visit you.
Yes. We're still operating remotely right now, but you have a standing invitation to come visit.
Definitely.
So that makes me wonder, like, where are all these clothes? And does Rue keep most of the stuff? Does it just like
not
go
most,
to storage?
Absolutely everything.
Everything.
Yay!
And very well, you know, and very,
that makes my heart happy. Exactly.
Very well and fresh, so that, you know, like 20 years later, you know, Rue can pull a spandex, you know, a cheap spandex dress, you know, with glue and glitter on it, and wear it now, and it still is wearable. You know, it's like, it is important that, and I think Rue knew the importance of this archive, you know, and, you know, I was like, Rue, you want to wear this dress? It's just like, how many more opportunities am I going to have to wear this dress? She's like, I want to wear this dress again. You know, that's how Rue, there's a little bit of insight into it. It's like, when am I going to be able to wear this again? You know?
That's amazing.
Dress listeners, did you know that you can save on everything from fashion to beauty, home decor to groceries, even kids' school supplies with Rakuten?
Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. Beauty, clothing, electronics, home, department stores, pets, you name it. You're already shopping at your favorite stores, so why not be saving while doing it? It really is a no-brainer.
How does it work, you ask? Well, stores pay Rakuten a commission for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the commission with its members. You get paid via a check or PayPal quarterly.
Membership is free, and it's easy to sign up. So join the 17 million members who have already saved at their favorite brands. Start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. That's Rakuten.com.
Dress listeners, whatever your reason for wanting to learn a new language, whether it's an upcoming international adventure, communicating with your friends and family abroad, or even professional purposes, Rosetta Stone has got you covered.
As the trusted expert in language learning for 30 years now, you can join millions of Rosetta Stone users to learn any of the 25 languages offered. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, and so many more.
And this is fast language acquisition, friends. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. And right now, you can get lifetime access to all 25 of Rosetta Stone's language courses for 50% off. That's language learning for 25 languages for the rest of your life, which, Cass, is frankly amazing.
It is. And what are you waiting for, dress listeners? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Dress listeners, if you suffer from seasonal allergies like me, Astapro is your new go-to. It has been super helpful to me this spring as it bursts into full bloom.
And that's because Astapro is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter solution for nasal allergy symptoms. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours.
Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray, and Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. You too can get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief like I have with Astapro. It gets me back in the game, ready to record the show for all of you.
Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. That's Astepro Allergy.com. Astepro and Go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Ruse told Vogue in 2018 that I would not go anywhere without Zaldi, since supermodel, our communication has gone from shorthand to telepathic. I mean, you both have such a wonderful bond. And that was also exhibited, your work and collaboration was exhibited. And what I loved, AJ and the Queen, it was such a good show. And I'm so disappointed it's not renewed. Can you talk a little bit about that process and designing for that TV show? Because I just thought that was such an incredible story.
Thank you. I think, yes, I think a lot of people wish it could have gone to a second season to like explore more. But it was really one of my favorite experiences with Rue and also in costume design. It really was my first costume television, what is it called? Drama? comedy? I mean, it was show. It was like my first experience. And, you know, I got to work with the incredible Tracy Gigi Field, a costume designer. And, you know, she did everybody and I did Rue and all Rue's performance gowns. And the idea of trying to like separate Rue, you know, because everyone, she's so famous, you know, but separate Rue, it's like, you know, will hair do and with a hair color make her another personality, you know? And it, for me, it did. And, you know, I really, you know, like tried very, not hard, but I was very aware of making distinctions between Drag Race costumes and costumes for Ruby. You know, like would Ruby wear, like, you know, wouldn't put RuPaul, you know, in metallic pink fringe chaps on Drag Race. But it certainly made sense, you know, in AJ and the Queen. But I just loved it so much because it was so lush and designing for a different type of a scripted show with the lighting crew. And the, I mean, it was so beautiful. Like I loved, you know, like in Drag Race, I mean, you know, the lighting is just like a beacon of light. You know, it's just like this beautiful, soft blur where all the colors look beautiful. But in AJ, you know, it was shot so I can't remember, but it was shot so beautifully and like the textures, all the spark, everything, you could see everything. And I was happy to see every single bit of the costume because we really, one, had the time and had the great budgets and the great teamwork with the directors and with Tracy and with everybody and the producer production to like really create something special and that felt very different than Rue. And I love that challenge and I hope we get to do it again.
I hope you do too, because it was so good. And the purple chandelier dress was one of my absolute favorites.
Oh my God. You know, and like thank you. And like the making of that dress, it was like, it was intense, you know, like it took a lot to make that. It's like, again, it's like I said, the time that we don't get to put necessarily into every outfit of Drag Race, you know, it's like, that wasn't there. It's like, it just was amazing. A great experience. Uplifting. Everyone was having a great time. Long hours, but rewarding nonetheless, even though we didn't get to see season two.
Yeah. Well, I love how you point out, like, you know, obviously how you would style Rue differently than the character Ruby. And that kind of brings up the point, you know, you have been in the drag scene since the 1980s. What changes have you seen in that time?
I mean, it's funny how you know, sometimes you see changes and then it's funny how you're like, oh, it's all the same. You know, it's the same contour, it's the same, blah, blah, blah. What I think is just, there's just more availability of imagery, of the idea of perfection, of the tools, and respect, you know, like just the more people that do it, the more creative voices come out and get to share their art with everybody, the more knowledge everybody gets. You know, it's like back when I was doing drag, you know, it's like, oh my God, there's a wig store. You know, it's like you go to Miami and be like, oh my God, there's wig stores. You know, it's like so exciting. But now it's like, you know, everyone can pretty much get a lace front wig. They can get a chest plate. They can get, you know, have all these major tools are available to them. And also like teachers and guides, you know, like 13 seasons of RuPaul have definitely put and like created such a global community that there's like a lot of support And it's like a fun competition. I feel like it's more fun in a way, you know, less like ball competition feeling. It's definitely more in the spirit of fun, I think. That's, I think, the difference I see. But it's perfection. I mean, everyone is so amazing, you know, like, I mean, you just look at them, like they're such superstars, you know, all the people that pass through that show.
For sure.
And speaking of superstars and fun, we can't let you go without asking if you have a favorite ensemble that you've designed for RuPaul over the years. We certainly have our favorites, but I just wonder if there's any favorites that you have or most memorable. And then I also had a question. If you designed the Queen Elizabeth dress for the Vogue Annie Leibovitz shoot, I have to know.
I did not do the Annie Leibovitz shoot. I wasn't in it at the time. And that was, I think that it just was like a last minute thing where, you know, Annie wanted that kind of image and they just happened to be on the Warner lot. And that was together and they pulled it together. I would love to have been involved in that for sure. But I got to do work with Annie for the first time on the Vanity Fair cover. And that really, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but it was what it's like. And for on so many levels, from an achievement level for Rue and for the community to see a Black man superstar drag queen on the cover, you know, of Vanity Fair. You know, like when I grew up, Vanity Fair, like being on the cover of Vanity Fair was, I mean, you couldn't even imagine how famous you had to be on the cover of Vanity Fair. So having that moment for Rue and to share with everybody and working with Annie Leibovitz, who is a legend and just knows how to deliver and knows how to like really deliver a concept and an image and a lasting image. It's like, to be part of that was something amazing because, you know, like that outfit didn't even exist that day of the shoot. It was like, you know, it was a something else. And I had, you know, created an outfit with all these stones that were on a white outfit. And Annie, it's from, she's like, I don't think I want to shoot white. And I was like, okay. Give me like 3 hours. Give me 3 hours. Nobody just, you know, disturb me and my team. And we're going to go in the back and I'm going to make this other outfit, you know, and like literally walking to stage, you know, as the last stones are being put onto that outfit. And it really turned out to be, you know, it became that cover outfit, you know, which the cover was meant to be gold, but this outfit just, it was like a magic, again, one of those magical moments that just happened in the moment. And with all the elements are there together. And it really was one of my favorites, you know, just because of the experience. And actually, it's the Vanity Fair cover.
And of course, Rue has this sky-high white wig and this beautiful skin-toned bodysuit that apparently your team put together in 3 hours that's covered in, you know, diamonds. And it's just, it's such a stunning image.
Yes. Oh, my God. And Curtis and Raven, who did the hair and makeup, you know, who won Emmys, their first Emmys last year for the show. It's like they did such an amazing job on that cover. It's like completely what we all wanted was an iconic image to like survive and last.
So we're curious, what's up next for Zaldi? Do you have any upcoming projects that you could share with us or give us a little hint about?
Definitely, you know, like I said, we have our 6 shows that we're working on this year. there is some rumblings from Vegas coming, but nobody's... Mm. So everything's very maybe, you know. I was working on this really big project in the UK. It was like, we started right before lockdowns in March of last year. And, you know, I'm hoping that we're hopeful that that is going to still pick up when we leave. But, you know, yes, there's some things that I can't really talk about. But, you know, like I said, it's a whole new year. And hopefully it goes everyone's way and we get to, like, return to, you know, all the real work that we know we can do.
Yeah. Well, here's to next step 2021 and everything that will bring for all of us.
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, I can't wait.
Saldi, thank you so much for being here with us today. This was such a treat, and it was so incredible to meet you and talk to you. Thank you.
You too. Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I had a really great time.
April, that was certainly a treat. And there's so much more about Zaldi's career that we did not even touch upon. And April, I don't know if you knew this, but we talked about Zaldi working as a highly sought after runway model early in his career. But did you know that the mannequin company Rootstein created a Zaldi mannequin?
I did not know that, but I am hoping to later on this season do an entire episode on Rootstein mannequins because they're not your average mannequin, let's just say. And also, we heard Zaldi mention the Levi's campaign that he was part of in the 1990s. I think it was 1995. But we didn't delve into why this commercial was controversial. And that is because he appeared in drag in this 501 commercial, Levi's 501. And that was apparently so controversial at the time that the commercial was banned in the U.S. So this is clearly pre-RuPaul's Drag Race days. Yeah. You know, and that show has been really instrumental in bringing drag front and center pop culture.
And Zaldi has had no small part in that transformation, both literally and figuratively. He has had such a prolific career already and shows no sign of stopping anytime soon. So Zaldi, thank you again for joining us today. And we are very much looking forward to following your work well into the future.
That does it for us today, dress listeners. May you consider adding a little fashion and fantasy into your wardrobe next time you get dressed.
Remember to tune in this Thursday for our very first Fashion History Now of the season, where we talk all things, per your request, Bridgerton. And we love hearing from you, so if you'd like to email us, please do so at dressed@iheartmedia.com.
You can also direct message us on Instagram at @dressed_podcast, where you'll find images accompanying each week's episode. You can also follow us on Facebook at @dressedpodcast without the underscore. And if you have a moment and want to take time to rate and review us on your podcast listening platform of choice, we would appreciate your support.
And as always, special thanks to our producers, Casey Pegram, Holly Fry, and everyone else at iHeartRadio who makes this show possible each and every week. More Dress Thursday!
Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.